Blog Talk Radio.
Tupac, please. He's going to tell black people what to do.
He recites some history.
Please, all these gangster rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks and West Virginia would be the most populous state.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lot of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Your heroes have arrived once again. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, we have a lot to get through, so we're going to go to a quick funk break. We've got to talk about the Ohio kidnappings. We've got to talk about 3D printers and the ability to print guns that work. We have to talk about your friends, meaning the friends of the Boston Bomber. Who are your friends? Who are we letting into this country? There's a lot to unpack, folks, a lot. So let's just get into it. A quick funk groove. This is Morehouse's own Van Hunt. Out of the sky, out of the sky. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm just going to bust a verse on
we
me down. I see some rising faces, but I'm falling much too fast. Tell them about the fate that's waiting. I'm headed straight for the ground, to the place where I used to stay. To suffer the crash landing on the runway. Out of the sky.
All right, once again, that was Van Hunt, Out of the Sky. Folks, this is Afro Nerd, the Midweek in Review edition. And I have to confess that I was doing a variation of the Bankhead Bounce and the Harlem Shake as I was listening to that groove. I have to confess, I think I spoke to the captain over the communicators from the planet Andoria. So let me just beam him in. Captain, it's time. Let's get to it, sir.
No long intro this time. I'm going to get right into it. I'll be terse here, Sir Afro Nerd. I'm coining a new term. It's called Unorthodox Black. Unorthodox Black. I'll explain what this means briefly. Follow this. To the outside observer, black people seem to have a menstrual awareness. Now, to the inside observer, the person who looks from the inside out, that means you're black, with some intelligence, you know that all of us do not think this way. But the outside observer has a tendency to think this is the way black people think, menstrual awareness. So unorthodox black has these qualities to the outside observer. This is a black man that has finished at least high school, probably has even more education, but at least finished high school, speaks well, is not walking around angry, has a job or is looking for a job or is working to building up their own business that they're working on or doing both. Or if they're not working, they might be going to school to further their education to get a job. This is the unorthodox black. You understand? The unorthodox black. To the outside observer, we appear as minstrels. Why else would the most talented, the most creative, the most physical man, and all of the resources come from our motherland, Africa, be at the bottom? Why else would we be the laughing stock if a lot of us did not adopt this minstrel awareness? The unorthodox black must take over. The unorthodox black must rule in order for us to rule, to get our birthright, because we are the ones that should be running the world. Unorthodox is the way forward, black man. Back over to you, Sir Afro. Now let's get it started.
All righty then. I believe the captain was hinting at a Mr. Charles Ramsey. And I was reluctant to talk about this thing, but the trajectory of this story, again, folks, we're talking about the Ohio kidnapping, and our prayers and goodwill go to the victims, because when you really get into the story, it is truly a horrific and horrendous one. But the way that the media are treating this, it's pretty much coming off as the Charles Ramsey show. Now, Mr. Ramsey is to be applauded as a hero, because that's exactly who he is, what he is. He is a hero. But We've spoken about this countless times, Captain, as you just so eloquently talked about. Some of us who are – I'm going to try to get around the word lower tier. I'm going to try to get around that word. But in this case, this gentleman is a bit rough around the edges. He's a man of the street who is of local color. In this instance, he's part of the local color or coloring. Not necessarily talking about physical color, folks, but talking about just the populace in this area of Ohio. And he speaks with a certain dialect. He speaks in the black English dialect, perhaps poorly educated. And it is what it is. I mean, we do have different, as the captain said, we have different types of black folks, whether you want to use the euphemism orthodox versus unorthodox. We know who he is. I'm sure our listening audience would be fully aware of a certain type of person of color that is rough around the edges. We saw Sweet Brown, who's become an internet meme. We spoke about Antoine. What's the gentleman's name, Captain?
Dotson.
Antoine. Yeah,
Dotson.
Antoine Dotson. We spoke about him. And already, the minstrel machine has welcomed Mr. Ramsey with open arms. And there's been some write-ups now. All of a sudden, we're hearing some write-ups, or we're seeing some write-ups on the internet about people wondering, well, are these type of colorful black folk, and I'm putting that in quotes, colorful black folk, are they being exploited? We've been talking about this for years. Of course they're being exploited. The difference is, I'm not so sure if it's a willingness on their part in the same way as the Rick Rosses and the Lil Waynes. I think they're more fully active or more of a full participant in the minstrelsy than these folks who are being positioned as minstrels by happenstance, by circumstances. So I think there's a bit of a difference. Captain, you were about to interject?
I don't know if you remember years ago. There was a black man that saved an individual when they jumped or they fell into a subway. And he jumped.
I remember that, right.
Yeah, okay. You know, his approach to the situation was entirely different. When he went on interviews, he had his suit on and everything else. It was an entirely different thing. Now, the media did swarm to him. There were people that sent him money and, you know, those type of things. But it wasn't the same type of thing. And looking back at that, looking at him and looking at this particular individual, I'd have to say that man was an unorthodox black, the way he conducted himself on the interviews and everything else. It's a bit different than what we're seeing here. That's just wanted to interject that, just to show the audience, even though the audience does know, the avid Afro-nerdy listener does know, but just to show you the different type of black people that's available out there for everybody to see. That's all.
Yeah, that was a Subway Superman, I believe, and I think that was he actually attended one of Bush's State of the Union addresses, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it was Bush, and he was called the Subway Superman, and he was a man of humble means also, but he wasn't a minstrel. And it's funny that if it were either yourself or myself, or I believe our friend Mr. Mims is also in attendance, if it was a person who's articulate, who's able to just, you know, just tell the story without so much of the color and histrionics and the animated kind of approach, we wouldn't be getting an internet meme kind of thing. We wouldn't be that interesting, I don't think. That's the part that's very disconcerting, is that if we did see a person of a certain level of intellect, a person who really wasn't so rough around the edges, there would be no interest in this guy. We would be moved. There's nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. Everybody has interviewed Charles Ramsey because there, Captain, we have to somehow get into the media's fascination. I'm going to colorize it this time. White media's fascination with black folk who are a bit rough around the edges, because everything stops. We're forgetting that these were three women that were terrorized for 10 years. There's a far more to get into. I'm assuming they will do it. But we can't help but look at this Mr. Ramsey. Look at this guy. Let's look to the right, while to the left we have young women that were brutalized for 10 years. Let's go to a quick clip to unpack it, get to provide more edification for our audience, and we will continue to unpack it. This is, you know what? I'm gonna go by this 1, 2, 3. This is the infamous. Well, you know, let me hold back on that. I have the actual 9/11 call that Mr. Ramsey made when he helped these young women get out of the household, so out of their captivity. So let's go to the ABC News clip. And we'll take it one at a time. This is ABC News talking about this horrendous Ohio kidnapping case. Hold on.
Now to the latest on that story we've been covering all morning on the three missing young women found in Ohio a decade after they all vanished, now reunited with their families. Big questions about how they were held in captivity, how they survived for so long. ABC's Lindsay Davis is tracking the latest on all this for us. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, guys. You know, as we await the details, we're left questioning, why did it take 10 years to provoke those screams for help? One woman who knew Amanda Berry told local media she always knew Amanda was a strong-willed person and eventually knew she would get out. She says she just wonders, why not sooner?
A frantic 911 call, 10 years in the making.
Help me, I'm Amanda Berry. I am the police.
Okay, and what's going on there?
I've been kidnapped and I've been missing for 10 years.
Amanda Berry, now free, after apparently being held captive only a short drive from where she disappeared a decade ago. But this morning there are questions about how Berry, now 27, and two other women, all three now adults, could have been held against their will for so long, mere miles from their friends and families. Gina De Jesus is now 23. Michelle Knight, 32. They'd even seen themselves on TV.
I'm Amanda Berry. I've been on the news for the last 10 years.
Okay, I got that here.
As they recover and adjust to their newfound freedom, Berry, De Jesus, and Knight are not alone. Similar cases to theirs have played out before.
The mind manipulation plus the physical abuse I suffered in the beginning. There was no leaving.
In the case of J.C. Dugart, an 11-year-old who was kidnapped and held captive for 18 years, she told ABC News' Diane Sawyer in her only television interview ever that even when the doors were unlocked, she never tried to run.
Something always held me back. It was like I still had those handcuffs on.
Do you think you'll ever understand it? Why you didn't leave?
I don't think so.
Elizabeth Smart was 14 when she disappeared and was found 9 months later, just 18 miles away from home. She says she was simply too afraid to speak up or try to escape.
It feels just like you're losing control of everything. You just feel like the world is coming to an end.
In the next few hours or days, we'll most likely learn what kept these women in the Seymour Avenue house.
The police chief says he believes that the women were tied up inside the house. The question, of course, were they always tied up? What we know so far is that Charles Ramsey, the man who helped Amanda escape, describes the scene yesterday as a woman going nuts to get out of that house. It's so easy to
seeing
imagine.
That one opportunity.
Yeah,
that's right. And more great news. We've just learned that all three women have been released from the hospital.
Already.
So that's a great sign.
That is great.
That's a great sign. All right, Lindsay, thank you.
All right, now let's go to another clip. This is the infamous 9/11 call that Mr. Ramsey, again, he is to be applauded for being a hero. He did save the lives of these young women. This is the neighbor that he has to be applauded, but already there's a minstrelsy working on with this. And it's not his fault, but the industry is there. They will take advantage. This is the 9/11 call. Excuse the expletives. But this is a man of the street, and he's kicking it, quote unquote, kicking it hard to the authorities to get help. So it's a bit rough around the edges. Hold on.
Cleveland 911 police, ambulance to fire.
Yeah, hey, bro, I'm at 2207 Seymour, West 25th. Hey, check this out. I just came from McDonald's, right? So I'm on my porch eating my little food, right? This broad is trying to break out the fucking house next door to me. So there's a bunch of people on the street right now and shit. So we like, well, what's wrong with you? What's the problem? She like, this motherfucker been kidnapped me and my daughter, and we've been in this bitch. She say her name is Linda Berry or some shit. I don't know who the fuck that is. I just moved over here, bro.
Sir, you know what I mean? Sir, you have to calm down and slow down. Is she still in the street?
Seymour Avenue.
Is she still in the street, or where did she go?
Yeah, I'm looking at her. She right now. She calling y'all. She on another phone.
Is she black, white, or Hispanic?
She white, but the baby look Hispanic.
Okay, what is she wearing?
White tank top, light blue sweatpants. Like a wife beater.
Do you know the address next door that she said she was in?
Yeah, 2207. I'm looking at it.
Okay, I thought that was your address. So that house.
No, I'm smarter than that, bro. I'm telling you where the crime was.
Okay,
not my
house. Sir, we can't talk at the same time. Do you want to leave your name and number? Or your name
Charles
and number?
Ramsey, R-A-M-S-E-Y.
What's the phone number? Are the people she said that did this, do you know if they're still in the house?
I don't have a fucking clue, bro. I just got here from McDonald's.
Can you ask her if she needs an ambulance?
You need an ambulance? Or what? She needs everything. She's in a panic, bro. I guess she's been kidnapped, so, you know, put yourself in her shoes.
We'll send the police out. Thank you.
There you go.
All right, and one last clip, folks. Bear with me. This is when or where the minstrelsy begins. This is the Ramsey Auto-Tune remix. Already, in less than 24 hours, the minstrel machine is on its way.
I'm talking with Charles Ramsey. He's a neighbor. Walk me through again what happened this afternoon.
I knew something was wrong when a little pretty white girl ran into a black man's arms. Dad gave away. Dad gave away. My neighbor got big tentacles because we see this dude every day. We eat ribs with this dude. But we didn't have a clue that that girl was in that house. She said, please help me get out. Dad gave away. Dad gave away. Dad gave away. Dad gave away. Dad gave away.
All right. Enough. Enough. And so it begins. And I see our friend from Chi-Town is also waiting. I just want to make one more point before I bring him on. And this is something I want the captain to chime in on as well. I don't know if I've made this analogy before. Maybe I have, but, you know, I was thinking about this case. And again, it really tugs at the heartstrings because you're thinking about these women. They were girls when they were kidnapped. They were 11, 12, preteens. Now they're grown. 10 years has been taken away from them for no reason. I mean, just because. I believe that one of the main perps knew the family of one of the captives. And he would actually converse with them and act as if he had not a clue about of the whereabouts of this young woman specifically. But I'm thinking about this thing. When you look at this in the modern era, Captain, we look at it as we should. We look at it with horror. We look at it with compassion. We talk about the quality of life that has been lost. We look the educational opportunities that are gone. I mean, these women were supposed to be educated from preteens. Now, what happens now? What happens now to someone whose education undoubtedly stopped at around fifth or sixth grade through their own volition? I mean, just because of that, they were raped. They were forced to have at least one child. I think there were several miscarriages. What does that sound like to you, Captain, if you go back about 150 years?
Slavery.
Yes. No one positions it that way. There's not really any sympathy. It lasted for centuries, and a culture sprang forth out of that type of captivity. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing, and no one – and I don't want to get to a victimization type of thing because, you know, we have to work beyond it. But when you look at this up close, look what it does to the victims. Look what it does to them. You know, obviously post-traumatic stress syndrome, your educational opportunities are depressed. I mean, what happens to these women in going forward or being able to acclimate in the modern society? Now, this is something that happens in the modern era. We're going to hear more stories like this. They're incidental. These are incidental, whereas 100-some-odd years ago, this was practice. It was legal to rape young black women, black men, black children, to raise the children up. When he said this was a white woman, but the child looks Hispanic because the captors were Hispanic. 150 years ago, the captors were white. The captives were black. The child, oh, the child, she looks to be black. It's the same thing. But when you talk about this, and remind you, Captain, there was a culture that sprang forth out of this behavior that wasn't incidental. It was practice. Why can't we look at the past the way that we look at the present? Because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Let me bring in Mr. Mims. I believe it's Mr. Mims. Sergio.
Yes, I'm here. Yes, you actually touched on things I was going to touch on. First of all, the fact that what has happened about this guy is, and other people you mentioned in the past, is simply the fact that we're in a new age with 24-hour cable stations and the internet. People like him become infamous or famous, whatever you want to call it, overnight. There's always been this history. You know, even as a kid, I remember locally it'd be something happened, some crime, some tragedy would happen, and reporters would intentionally go for the most inarticulate black person they could find. It was the thing they would do to explain what happened, or the most colorful character. They always have done that. But now, because of the internet and cable, now they're known throughout the country. The other thing you touched on was the fact that the reason why they're focused on the guy's name, I forgot his name now, Ramsey, is that, in effect, he's comic relief for people to keep their mind off of the horrible situation these three women were in. And you just touched on it right now. You're the first person I've heard who to say this, is that these women are screwed for life mentally. There's no way they can live a normal life. I've been watching a paper. Oh, she's back home. Isn't this wonderful? She's back with her family. This woman is psychologically damaged for the rest of her life. That they don't mention. Like I said, she can return to her life and start again where she left off, like nothing had happened. She was chained in a basement. I believe some of them had children by this man. There were perhaps other children who died, who were killed or buried. This is, you know, it's a nightmare. So Ramsey, he serves as something to keep your mind off that.
But isn't it odd, you know, because I just thought about this this afternoon, actually. I mean, I go back and forth with these things popping in my head. But it is very much analogous to slavery. And, you know, there was a war that was fought to maintain this, Sergio. There was a war to maintain this, and it was very much legal, very much practiced, very much a culture. See, we look at it now differently. I wish people would position it the way that I have. I don't know if I've actually heard the argument put forward the way that I mean, I'm not saying I invented anything.
No, nobody has. I haven't heard that, except for you.
There should be more people talking about slavery in this way, young girls were raped repeatedly. They were kept captive. They were chained also. Okay? It was this, I mean, they call this white slavery. I'd say something else that's very insidious about how this is being treated. We know who Amanda Berry is. We always knew who she was because, and this is not a slight against her, but she's white, even though she suffered something horrendous. But the women of color, De Jesus, they talk about Amanda Beers and the other two. What's up with that? Oh, see, this is done as practice, natural. The two Latinas are just the two Latinas. But the white woman, we're focused on her now.
Of course, because she's the white woman.
But that's the issue. And actually, Ramsey brought this up in a comical way, because he's been interviewed on a number of occasions now. He's going to be a star. McDonald's has said they're going to reach out to him. Okay? McDonald's is going to reach out to him. And God bless him. You know, he's a dishwasher, so it's good for him to I guess, to come up. These people are able to come up. I mean, Antoine Dawson isn't living in a project anymore. I mean, he's part of a machine somewhere.
No, now he's straight and he's about to become a black Israelite.
Yeah, well, hey, I don't know what to say about that. I said last show,
By the way, talking about him, whenever you think of the Antoine Dawson guy, he's a smart guy because he made a lot of money from that autotune song. He made a ton of money. He cut a deal with the guy who made whatever song it was, and he has been living off that money. Now, I hope Ramsey has the same deal. I hope so. You know, I hope he gets his hair cut. I hope he gets his teeth fixed. I hope, you know, it's already coming. You know this is going to happen. In case you haven't heard this, you know the first thing the media was going to do was go into his background and find out about any malfeasance, and they did. It turned out
that he had been arrested.
Yeah, of course he did. Of course. I mean, that's what they always do. That's their job. It turned out the smoking gun, and now he's gone everywhere. They found that he's been arrested 3 times and has served time for domestic abuse.
Wow.
See, now, you know that...
It's not pertinent to this. Let the man have it. Come on.
But it's beginning. You see, it's beginning now. That's when you know you're famous. When the media says, okay, let's dig up dirt about him. That's what they always do. And they did. Okay, now he claims that the woman who... he attacked, you know, they're on good terms now, and it's all in the past. And let's face it, a lot of people, hey, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies have criminal records. You know, I mean, so he has stuff in the past. Let me just see what will happen. Bet your bottom dollar Oprah's going to interview him. I can see it coming up.
Well, you know what? He's not the perpetrator. Why? I mean, this is where someone needs to take a microscope to the media and say, you know, if he was the perpetrator, then you would do that. He's the hero. Why is it necessary to dig into his life like that? Because I don't know how that works. I mean, just all of a sudden you're known, and therefore we have the right to dig into your situation.
That's right.
Yes, of course.
That's how it's done.
I mean, you know, that's the deal. That's the game. Look, whether consciously or unconsciously, when you're a celebrity, no matter which way you became a celebrity, either you were an actor or you're a writer or you're on TV or in the movies or even because you saved somebody's life, once you become a celebrity, automatically you make a deal with the devil that they can go into your life. The media.
Wow.
When, you know, I'm not bragging, but when I interviewed Halle Berry like a month and a half ago, I asked her, I said, is there anything you know now that you – this is a question I like to ask people. Do you know now? You should know before you got into the business. And she told me, if I had known how much the media got into my personal business, the way they follow me when I go shopping or when I pick up my daughter from the school, I would have had second thoughts about going to acting. I got a degree in journalism. I probably would have stayed becoming a journalist.
Wow.
That's what she said. Now, I believe, like, in destiny, so even if she became a journalist, she still will wind up where she is. And let's face it, we're grateful she became an actress, aren't we? So the thing about it is that that's the deal you make with the devil. The deal you make with the devil, and once you become a celebrity, is that they go into your personal life. Now, he's not the kind of person, he's not sophisticated enough to get, of course, lawyers or PR people or anything like that who handle things like that. He's just a guy from the streets who, you know, overnight has become a nationwide celebrity. There's nothing he can do to stop that. It's going to happen.
Incredible. Listen, let me, Serge, I'm going to go to a quick musical break. We're going to change things around a little bit, gentlemen.
You're going to talk about our girl going to prison?
Yes, but you know what? I'm going to talk about that after another situation with Afro Nerd and New York Radio. I got to talk about this first. This is very, very interesting. And then we'll talk about Lauryn Hill and how she's, she needs to be on meds. All right, sir.
All right.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, We're going to go to a quick musical break. This is Howlin' Wolf giving you a little bit of blues. Smokestack Lightning. We'll be right back. More Afro Nerd in a few moments. The Great Howling Wolf, Smokestack Lightning. You know, folks, actually, the last time I saw Mr. Mims, he came by to visit our great city, NYC, the Big Apple. And after our meeting, I hung around the village for a little bit. You know, I love to buy clothes and look around, that kind of thing. And I don't always go to the city. And although we are city residents, you know, sometimes you're jaded about Manhattan. But I was there, so I stuck around. I was going to some of the clothing stores there. Now, you know, this is hipster central. And one of the stores that I had gone to, they were playing Louis Jordan, which reminds me I'm going to have to load some Louis Jordan for our listenership. Now, Louis Jordan, for those who really do not know the gentleman, Louis Jordan, iconic R&B king of the 1940s, when we had Maceo Parker. He mentioned that Louis Jordan was one of his idols and definitely was someone that influenced James Brown. So Louis Jordan was a huge R&B performer during the 1940s and 50s. Now, the funny thing is, and I hate to racialize everything, but I really, because I want everyone, and our listenership is multiracial, multicultural, but I'm going to bring this stuff up every once in a while to everybody. You go into some of these white clothing establishments, when they want to be ironic, when they want to do the hipster thing, they'll play a 1940s jam like something from Louis Jordan. And I distinctly remember listening to the song. It's a great song, timeless. This is classic R&B. This is your inheritance, black man and women. This is your inheritance. But it reminds me that, you know, Waka Flocka Flame and all these other people, these nouveau minstrels, that, you know, a young black person, not all, but I would suspect many, would say, why are they playing this old folks music? What is this stuff? You know, just completely disrespecting it when it's your inheritance. But you go to a white establishment, they will get it. They will be, when they want to be ironic, they'll play Louis Jordan in the modern era. And it fits perfectly. It fits in, when you're real suave, quote unquote suave bowl of clothing store, why not play Louis Jordan? Okay? It does something to the atmosphere. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why we do Urban Alternative, the captain of myself, and why you will hear me play something like Howling Wolf. I didn't want this to be a big soapbox moment, but it just reminds me that we have to do this people. We can't continuously play the junk. Sometimes it might make some sense that someone called Afro Nerd, maybe I might want to be ironic. Maybe I might want to be a hipster. You see, Captain, do you follow me before we go to the next thing? That doesn't it seem odd? As a black person, it comes off odd for me to play My Inheritance. Why aren't more people doing this? It's your music. But you go to the white establishment in the village, they'll play Louis Jordan. But you go to a black establishment, they won't play Louis Jordan. It's too weird for them. Something's wrong. All of this is wrapped up in the same issue, folks. That's why this is why this show is important. I'm bringing this stuff to you because these are the things that I'm observing. Captain.
Yes, sir. Well,
minstrels
are not going to play that kind of music. Minstrelnomics, made up word. Minstrelnomics is their theology, made up word. It's not a real world. Minstrelnomics, that's their theology. So they're not looking past that. That's why they like Waka Flocka and all this other foolishness that they tune into. That's what their minstrel brain will tune into. So there you have it.
Incredible. I just think it's funny that when it's time to be hip, you go into a white establishment, and God bless them that they do that. It's not a haterade or anything. I like that they did that. But it just seems odd that we're so far removed from the inheritance that if we did it, it comes off odder, more odd than if, well, you know how it goes. Let me move things along, ladies and gentlemen. Again, this is Afternerd, Afternerd Radio, Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk. Feel free to buzz on in. This is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Now, many times during the broadcast, I will make reference to New York's open line, formerly helmed, and I say that, with a great deal of sadness in a way. And I need to get him on the show. James Ntoumé, legendary R&B and jazz artist. Those who may be familiar with him, with his work as the music director on New York Undercover, Malik Yoba's show from a few years ago, well, more than a decade and a half ago. Anyway, he's no longer with New York's Open Line. I was a guest on New York's Open Line when I first started blogging, and actually when I first started doing this show. And I was a guest to discuss black folk and blogging and how the media has changed, how media is more instantaneous. This is pre-Twitter, actually. When, you know, if you had a blog, you had a cell phone, a camera phone, you're able to put news up as it's occurring. You're able to beat the newspapers. Newspapers work on a 24-hour cycle, but a newspaper cannot beat the internet. Something happens in an instant, it's literally up on the internet in an instant. Heck, they got a whole internet meme in less than 24 hours for Mr. Ramsey. So the papers can't beat that. Anyway, I was brought in because I've mentioned this story before. During the Sean Bell case, for those who may be unfamiliar with that case, it was a big, big, big case of cops shooting an unarmed black person in a car. His friends were there as well. I'm not going to rehash the case because I have my own feelings on it. But because I made the comment that perhaps black folks should consider, young black people should consider making some changes on their own. There's always this drive to tell the police officers that they should change. And I'm not even saying that shouldn't be the case, that policemen should change. There should be some changes made in local police. Conversely, maybe I suggested, maybe some of what's going on in youth culture should be examined. Maybe some changes could be made there. When I said that, all hell broke loose, and I was treated very disrespectfully by one of their co-hosts. Because of that, they allowed me on, and I've been a pretty regular on their show, calling in from time to time. Hey, Afro-Nerd, my man. For whatever reason, maybe because of how I speak and because of my contrarian spirit, they give me respect, but at the same time, they were a bit hesitant about coming around to some of our Afro-Nerd-isms. The captain knows this well. For some reason, when we take a certain stance, or some of the stances that we've taken, doesn't go over too well. You know, there's a certain meme that many black folk are accustomed to, and when you are a contrarian and you start to analyze this stuff because you're trying to save lives, even if it makes perfect sense, and oftentimes it does, when it makes perfect sense, you get clowned, you're misunderstood. They treat you in a very nervous fashion. You know, the Coco Mode show with Shauna Renee a few weeks ago, I played that. And when, you know, Afro Nerd from New York, oh, what the hell is that? What is that? Everyone does this. Oh, it's Afro Nerd. Oh, it's that guy. Oh.
You got to tighten up and get ready.
You got to tighten up. A storm's coming through. Captain? I mean, I'm not trying to be grandiose, but after a certain amount of times you do these shows, you get to wonder, what the hell's wrong? What's going on? Why this get a little old me? All right. All this big build-up.
Like,
what's going on? So I called up. Now, this show has been demoted to a certain degree. I didn't want that to happen. It used to be a two-hour show. Now it's a one-hour show. Now it's on an hour, actually 2 hours earlier. And because of, allegedly, the programmers did some polling, and now more about the minstrelsy, Captain. The polling, according to the listening public, their listening public, the listeners are saying, well, they would prefer to hear more music. On Sunday.
Minstrel theology.
On Sunday. They can't even take a break from the minstrel show, ladies and gentlemen, for 24 hours on a Sunday. On Sunday, everyone else is talking. Early morning, Sunday television especially, everyone is talking. But for the black folks, allegedly, based on polling, we still want music. So they've been demoted. 1 hour when they had gotten to, They're up earlier. I mean, and now Entombe has left, and I suspect he left because of that foolishness. And this is a community show. Not that I really agree with a lot of their premises and their topics, but I believe they should be respected because the community does need a way to vent. They're taking that away because allegedly black folks would prefer to sing and dance and to do the minstrel jig. All right, so I called up about stop and frisk. I got to explain this also. When you call these shows up, there's a screener. I tell them it's Afro-Nerd. Oh, we know you, no problem. It was about stop and frisk. Then, what was the issue? No, I'm sorry. The initial issue was the violence in black communities, right? So I'm on hold for that. Then they said, oh, you know, they get back to me and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, it's stop and frisk now. Do you still want to hold? Yes. It's the same topic, isn't it? You know what I mean by that, Captain?
Mm-hmm.
That told me This is how black folks want this topic, or I should say some black folks, want this topic to be discussed. I said this before, and I'll say it in this clip I'm about to play. Stop and frisk does not occur in a vacuum. We can talk about the rightness or the wrongness from a legal perspective of stop and frisk. We can talk about that. But it is a policy that is being employed by the NYPD because they have no other place to go. We're talking about a lack of cooperation by many members of the black community, inner city, underclass black community. The whole no snitching, that kind of thing. So the numbers are ridiculous when it comes to black and brown criminality in some of these communities. Heck, weren't we supposed to talk about Brownsville too, Captain? We'll talk about that also. Got to talk about Brownsville, Brooklyn. They don't deliver mail there. Mail there, ladies and gentlemen. Mail carriers are afraid to deliver mail in Brownsville, Brooklyn, and the residents are upset. But can you blame the postal workers? It's so dangerous, they don't want to deliver the mail. But the community leaders will tell you, we can't stop and frisk, we can't intervene. So I called up about this. I was surprised they had a complete turnaround because I gave them an argument that they cannot disassemble, they can't deconstruct, and they cannot atomize. These arguments that we are coming up with, I want someone to call in and tell me how they can deconstruct some of what we say. Some of it. They'll go all around tangents, Captain, but they can never truly deconstruct the argument. All right, this is Afro Nerd on Open Line talking about this. It's about 3 minutes. Hold on.
I really do appreciate it. Let's continue.
You want to take one more call before we go?
No, yeah, we have still got time. Go ahead.
All right, let's go to line number 5. We have our good brother Afro Nerd calling us out of Queens. Good morning, Afro Nerd. How are you, my brother?
Pretty good. Nice to hear from you, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Mighty early, by the way. This new time slot.
New time.
Listen, we have to deal with political correctness with our communities. We don't want to really be honest about what's going on. I appreciate the other callers' opinions. But we have to start to deal with the rampant criminality that's occurring in our communities disproportionately. We're talking about these stop and frisk things. Obviously, you can tell I'm for stop and frisk. We're talking about this as if it's in a vacuum. It's not occurring in a vacuum. Mayor Bloomberg was quite passionate in saying, listen, the New York Times, the major media operations, they're not talking about Mr. Alphonso Bryant, the young gentleman that was killed.
Mm-hmm.
His mother, the victims, are coming out and saying, the victim's parents and friends and family, these folks are saying, listen, we have to do something because we're killing ourselves, literally killing ourselves. And I find it interesting as well that with what happened with terrorism after 2001, that black folks, by and large, were very passionate about having profiling for Muslims. And I thought that, wait a minute, that's not going to happen. But no, black people supported profiling for Muslim folk. But now that we have our own intraracial terrorism, because I think babies getting shot in the head, elderly getting shot in their homes is a problem. So we're going to discuss it. Let's be honest. Let's get away from the faux pride. And let's start talking about the nihilism on record, nihilism in our culture, the hip-hop music. If we don't fit the profile, like one woman said, that the Boston bombers, guess what? They didn't catch it because they didn't fit the profile. Let's start talking about black folks not fitting a certain profile, and then let's see what happens. Let's try for cultural shift, cultural change internally, get the numbers down, then we might have a leg to stand on. We can't have a leg to stand on if the numbers are so rampant in these inner-city communities.
Afro Nerd, let me ask you this question before you go. You hit on the issue of profile.
Right.
Check this out. I wear my pants sagging. I have dreads.
Pull you over.
That's the profile, right?
That's not always the profile.
That's not always a profile. I see.
Well, the message I'm sending is that if young folks, if you are out there, if you're sagging your pants and you're wearing your hairstyle in a different kind of way, you are likely now to be stopped by the police.
Well, that same profile also fits white youngsters today, saggy pants. Do they get stopped and profiled?
Not as much.
Do they get profiled?
Not
no,
as
they
much.
Don't. No, they, not as no, not as much. Not
as
all.
Much. Not
as
much.
Look, the guy at the Boston Bombers walking. You saw those pictures, the videos of those guys. Come on, man. They had backpacks on, you know, walking down the street. Pants look kind of saggy to me.
Well, the point is that if our brothers and sisters out there, if they don't want to get stopped, as Afro Nerd sort of laid it out, and thank you very much, Afro Nerd, for your call, they got to do just the opposite of what the profile calls for.
Captain?
Yes, sir.
Now, it took years for them to repeat what I've been saying. I've been calling up to open line for maybe 5 or 6 years. When I first called up and talked this way, I can't tell you what the reaction was. All of a sudden now, they're repeating, they're regurgitating what I'm talking about because it has gotten that bad. It is irrefutable that the numbers are what they are, and I know what it is. It's so much pride involved. We have so much pride that we don't want to admit that we're killing ourselves. It is a type of embarrassment. Let's be frank about it. Just like some of us are embarrassed about Charles Ramsey because of tribalism, we're allegedly connected to him. Why does he speak that way? Why isn't his teeth fixed? You know, why can't he be more articulate? Why can't he cut his hair? I mean, these are the things that are going on. A crazed white person, Honey Boo Boo, is not the concern of an upper tier Connecticut white person. The tribalism train doesn't work for white people, not as much. It really doesn't. But for black folk, no one is going to be discerning enough to make distinctions, and there's no payoff for that. It's too complicated to look at black folks in a multi-layered, accurate way. It's easier to say, well, you're all black, and that's it. When they talk about the Obamas, again, Harvard-trained attorneys. Sometimes when folks want to clown them, they will speak in a black vernacular or a black English vernacular. And you sit there and say, in what planet would President Obama speak like Steve Harvey, speaks in the morning with his proselytizing behind? People know I don't really like Steve Harvey that much, but I'm just saying. But they do it anyway because of tribalism. They're going to force minstrelsy on you even when you're not one. Because of tribalism. Anyway, what are your thoughts about that little exchange?
Well,
all this time they're coming around.
Here's the thing that's not being said here. See, when you tune into menstrual awareness, and that's the overall consciousness, even though there are plenty of individuals that do not tune into this in the black community. But as an outside observer, that's how they feel. That's how it appears. That's what the media is pushing and everything else. And there are a lot of us that do tune in to menstrual awareness. Now, Sergio Mims may be very intelligent. Afro Nerd may be very intelligent. Q Storm may be very intelligent. But now let's look at the intelligence of these minstrels. Someone goes out on the block, his pants are sagging off, he has a do-rag on, he has the wife beater, he has on 30 tattoos to his body. He shoots up the block, right? Police are looking for this type of individual. Okay, fine. It happens a week later. Same type of individual looking the same way. Why are you, as the black person, dressing the same way as that individual? Why are you putting on the uniform of that individual? You now fit the profile. That is low intelligence right there. That is low intelligence. Now, Sergio Mims would figure that out early if he lived in some place like that. Q Storm would figure it out very early if he lived somewhere like that. Afro Nerd would figure that out early if he lived somewhere like that. I am not going to dress and look like this individual. That's the first thing. Now, if they stop me, now I have a legitimate beef. Now I can say, you're just stopping me because I'm black. That is intelligence.
Why can't we figure this out? You know why we can't figure it out? Number one, defiant. That's the first thing. You're defiant. And the intelligence is low in these individuals. That's the bottom line. I'm saying it. I know you don't like hearing that, but that's the reality of it. That's the reality of it. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, listen, we're all about cognition. I like being smart. I think I always have. But I think, I've mentioned this before, we can't seem to market intelligence. We can't seem to market black intelligence. But we need to. Someone will do it, probably Apple Nerd and the captain, which is what we're desperately trying to do. Someone has to be able to market the concept of black intelligence because there's nowhere else to go. We cannot continue to live this way where this dim-wittedness, this sloth way of moving, of thinking is acceptable. There's got to be the smart black guy. I think even Sergio mentioned this briefly. I think it might have been on his site. I failed to mention it like I really should have. But there was a gentleman – well, actually, there was a couple of black gentlemen, men of color on Jeopardy that were very – they were a little nerdy, dare I say, nerdy in appearance. You know, sometimes nerds have this I have a nerdy appearance. Let's be blunt about it. But they were of high cognition, and one in particular had a huge afro, and when he won in a very, very colorful way, you know, he was able to maneuver and actually had a sign up about him winning. You know, he put the sign up, and it was completely off the rails. It was terrific, but it was something we need to see. We need to see the smart. Let's look how people reacted when they saw Django.
Yep.
Look how we reacted. We're still talking about Django because we saw in cinema a thinking black person, and it frightens people. You know, I keep on repeating it because I still can't believe it. I saw black women smiling toward the screen of a very violent picture. But they saw this black man who was able to outmaneuver these whites in a completely desperate situation. That's why I'm so desperate to see this black superhero kind of thing. If I could see a Black Panther, I've said this ad infinitum. We need to see that. And I want someone like Tarantino to do it because he'll bring the money in. We know that a Spike could do it or any other black director, but unfortunately the way the cultural meme is, you're going to have the white director to do the black film in order for black and white to go see it in droves. That's what I would – and I would want to see the quote-unquote black Batman so we could see a thinking black person on screen. We've got to see that. All right. We have callers. Caller, I'm going to bring Sergio back in as well. Let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, we're going to talk about Ms. Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill, again, not very thoughtful. Just not. I think bipolar, maybe she has the same Jesse Jackson Jr. disease, I think.
Something's going on.
The woman is under 40. She's got like 6 kids by one of the, you know, from one of the Marleys. God bless her, but come on. She talks like a maniac. Now she's got to do 3 months for tax evasion. We'll talk about it. All right, this is a cover. This is The Wall. The Wall by Ice-T, M1 of Dead Prez, and Reese. Let's groove. We'll be right back. Pink Floyd's The Wall. We'll be right back.
Hey, what up, Fabrizio? This is Ice. Just want to let you know we had a great time at your concert. You was a guitar playing beast.
Guess what? Indoctrination. Mind exploitation. Assimilation, regurgitation, brainwash education. Too many puppets, they tell you a lie, make you love it. They're walking dead, they're making zombies out of the public. Marionettes on strings, we just carry the debt. If you resist the system, they get very upset. You just a part of the machine, a cog in the wheel. Using us, no wonder why we harder than steel. If you live in this, you know how I feel. Red pill, blue pill, what the deal? Is it Hollywood or real life? They want your body and soul so we get killed twice. Half human, half robot, it's ill, right? I'm about to unplug and try to get this chip out. Use your third eye, you know what this is about. We got to shout.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Out of my head, out of my
thought process. Think for yourself, I'm talking about progress. Break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in.
All in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
Let's break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in.
We don't need no education.
What you gonna teach me? I don't already know. Everything I need to learn's on a TV show. Anything I wanna get, I could pull up the net. School's obsolete, homeboy Google's the future. Wow, prayers on mama, email, spam my computer. We ain't nothing but a number in this digital age. The bubble pop, now millions grams from minimum wage.
We don't need no
thought control, 3D high def. They got my brain overloaded, ain't got one cell left. The kids don't play outside no more. They grab the Xbox controller and they go to war. Parents delusional, they club like they're rich and ball. You're just another brick in the wall.
My thought process. Think for yourself, I'm talking about progress.
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall.
Break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in.
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall.
Let's break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in. My thought process. Think for yourself, I'm talking about progress. Break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in. Let's break it down like the wall in Berlin. Keep the lies out, let the truth in.
Okay, we're back once again, giving the best of urban alternative music. That was M1 from Dead Prez, Ice-T, and Reese covering Pink Floyd's The Wall, The Wall. The call-in number once again, folks. Again, this is Afternoon Radio. It's 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I want to segue. We still have about 20 minutes or such. I want to segue into this other debacle. I was disheartened when Mr. Snipes, who was recently released, he did his time, 3 years for him, for tax evasion. Now we have young Ms. Lauryn Hill. She's got to do some time as well because she failed to pay her taxes. I believe she owed, I don't know. I know she paid at least almost $1 million. She paid back almost $1 million, but she still owed more. And now she's doing time for it. Luckily, she did. I guess she copped a plea or something. She's only doing 3 months. But her ramblings, Captain, her ramblings about what happened are bizarre. We have some callers. Let's bring him in. Let's bring back Mr. Mims. I know he wants to talk about this.
Skip the 916.
Well, bring both of them in. Sergio, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. And let me bring in 916 as well. 916, welcome to Afro-Nerd. Tell us who you are, by the way. Where are you calling from?
Gentlemen, this is Big Sexy and Sack from Sacramento, California.
Hey.
And how you doing, guys? And
pretty
I just
good,
want to put in my little opinion about, I mean, I don't want to, you know, step on the show by any stretch.
Go ahead.
But this thing about black higher education, when I was in Texas, oh, God, 10 years ago with a friend of mine who was no longer with us, unfortunately, we were backstage at WrestleMania, and one of the servers in catering, a black man, walked up to me and said, "How do you talk like that?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I want to talk good like you do. What do I do?" I said, "Well, I went to college for 4 years and law school for 3 years." He said, "You think I can do that?" I said, "I don't see why not." And after that conversation, it really hit me how much just a knucklehead like me being at WrestleMania, of all places, can affect someone else's life and inspire them to go ahead and do better. You know, those things are reported enough. You know, we hear about all the stupidity and the saggy pants and all that bullshit, but we don't hear about people, just regular people, who want to do better and then go ahead and put in the work to make themselves better and get that education, because it's all there. You know, a lot of people claim, well, I can't afford it or this, that. You know, I don't want to hear that shit. I didn't come for money, but I made it happen. It's all about how much the individual wants to put in the work. Now, I'm not calling anybody lazy, but it's there for you. Make it happen.
That's an amazing story because, you know, for someone to admit that they're able to – because when you see Mr. Ramsey, and again, he's being clowned somewhat, BS, he's being clowned. The Minstrel Machine is there for him. And I think many whites are comfortable with that kind of black person. But, you know, there's that lack of awareness. I don't think a person's aware of that type of English. I mean, black English is you know, it's a type of vernacular. I mean, linguists will tell you that allegedly, but you should be able to code switch. You know, I speak in slang on occasion in certain company, maybe not in mixed company, but I don't know, but that's not even slang really. Slang is even separate from black English. Black English has its own syntax. It's a different thing. IB, and I don't know what to say about that. I think what you just said is a very heartwarming and yet troubling kind of thing. That someone felt so, they saw the difference and said, wow, I wish I could speak like that. But how did they not know that you kind of have to go through the educational system to do that? I mean, you know, you kind of have to go through the educational system. I don't know. You know, that's a rough road. Serge, BS, I want you to stick around for a minute. We're going to talk about this. I don't want to call her a minstrel exactly because she's quite talented. I like her music.
Mentally ill, that's
we,
all.
We haven't really heard any of her music in about a decade, really. She seems to be just completely mentally depressed. I mean, she's just out of it. Did you hear about this, gentleman? I know Sergio wants to chomp in on this. What she said is what's really troubling. Just to paraphrase, she said in so many words, I'm a victim. I shouldn't have to pay taxes. I'm a child of slaves. Now, I just talked about, you know, hey, I mentioned that black folks are children of slaves now. But you can't use that as an excuse for every damn thing. You got to pay your taxes. It sounds goofy as hell, gentlemen. It sounds goofy.
Well, first of all, I've heard that before. Oscar Brown Jr. used that same excuse. That's been used before. Even to a certain extent, Wesley Snipes used that, a variation of that excuse. Being a black person, being persecuted, we don't have to pay taxes. I've heard that before. It doesn't. And look what it got Wesley Snipes. Look where it got Lauryn Hill. By the way, am I wrong to think she's overrated? She did this one album. She hasn't done anything since. But now she's got a new contract, and actually she signed a new contract with Sony, and Sony loaned her something like $650,000.
Wow.
Immediately at the signing of the contract so she can pay off most of the thing. She got off lightly. She got off very lightly because she paid off most of the debt she owes. But there were people comparing her with who's the actress' name? Lindsay Lohan. Well, Lindsay Lohan
right.
gets arrested all the time, and they let her go. No, Lindsay Lohan didn't get in trouble with the feds.
Yeah.
When you get
yeah.
in trouble with the feds, kiss your ass goodbye. Look what happened to Martha Stewart. She lied to the feds. They put her in prison.
Yes.
Wesley Snipes, he got in trouble with the feds. They put him in prison. Don't F with the feds. You'll go to jail. She got her very lightly. In terms of her ranting, you know, a couple months ago, you probably saw this, she released this long statement about basically to explain why she hadn't paid taxes, that her life was being threatened and this and that. Now, if you read the thing, it actually was a pretty good description of the behind-the-scenes working of the recording industry. She gave a really excellent account of what happens when you're a young artist and you sign the contract and the way you're treated and the way the music vendor handles you. Actually, that was pretty good. But it didn't explain why she didn't pay her taxes.
Well, that's the key component, isn't it? That's the part that bothers me is that, I mean, I'm just tired in the modern era where you see someone like Romney who's able to pay, what does he pay, 15%? Well, his is because of retirement income. He's got a whole bunch of wacky ways. I really shouldn't say wacky. It's probably pretty commonplace. But I just know how I think. If I came into that kind of money, I would just for the Afro Nerd brand, I'm going to have to come up with a way to do my finances the way that Mr. Romney has done them. And too many black folks that I see, high profile, that have gone through millions of dollars, and they haven't figured out a way to be more financially astute. I mean, we're hearing, it's getting tired, Sergio, because, listen, we had Maceo Parker on a few months ago. He didn't mention it, but I've heard other biographers, I think it's a biography of James Brown out now, and the biographer talked about how James Brown, you know, he in some ways he was very quick-witted about money, but in other ways he did exactly what Lauryn Hill did. He blew through money, and you're going back to begging the record company to lend you money, and they're not a bank. The record company's not a bank. Antonio Cromartie, the football player, he had to borrow $500,000 to pay for child support. I mean, this is just sloppy.
I just read an article not too long ago about oh brother, the basketball player who just claimed that he couldn't buy a hamburger.
From Philly, the Philadelphia.
The guy, what's his name? He said he started crying. He can't pay a hamburger. Allen Iverson. They did an article about where did he lose his money, and it's just stupidity. He spent it all. He loaned it out to people. He had an entourage of 30 people. He never saved any money. It was just like seven reasons why he lost all his money, and it's just stupidity. And the other thing about Lauryn Hill is that I saw something where they talked about how much money she made between the years 2003 and 2007, something like that, where they're charging her for not paying her taxes. She really didn't make a lot of money.
That's
which
true.
Makes me, so compared to what she should have gotten, considering she had one of the biggest selling albums ever. And I go like, well, this is the oldest story in the world. What kind of contract did she sign with the record company? It's like one of those Tony Braxton contracts where the record company gets everything.
Well, that's true too. But listen, she still was able to get millions for not really doing it. She doesn't really perform. The woman's still getting millions of dollars, not high millions, low millions, and not performing. That's another aspect too. You would figure she would probably make it five times that much if she was out here in rotation performing, going to Europe, going to Asia. She's not doing anything. She's just sitting on her ass.
Well, and she keeps getting pregnant. Getting pregnant by the son of Bob Marley, who then dumped her for a white chick. Well, there you go.
Well, you know what?
Whose only claim to fame was, didn't he once set himself on fire while sitting in a car or something like that? I can't remember. Something bizarre like that. He was in a car and set on fire,
Sergio,
when he was in it.
Well, Sergio, you're hinting to what I was
probably
about to
smoking
say.
Ganja. I don't know.
Well, Sergio, you're hinting as to what we talk about all the time. These are repeated stories. They just keep on repeating and repeating and repeating. You can go back 10 years, 20 years, 50 years. It's the same sloppy story, and all I want to do is create some kind of Afro Nerd mentoring program where I waltz in with some kind of projector and sit these Negroes down and say, listen, this is your future. We've seen this before. You're going to do it again. Rihanna and Chris Brown are next because they don't have their cognition can't even move a piece of lint. We see this. we see it. That's why I don't understand. I wish I could say, hey, you know, 10 years ago, so-and-so did this. Bobby Brown's broke. Whitney Houston died penniless. Her aunt, her cousin, Dionne Warwick, has no money. I mean, come on. We've seen it before. We've seen it before. Why does it keep on happening? Why give us any? What's that clip? I almost want to play that Dave Chappelle clip where he's, you know what he says as Rick James. I don't have that clip, but I need to get it now. I need to get it. Anything on this? We got about 9 minutes remaining, gentlemen. Anything else to say about Lauryn Hill? I mean, do you think she's going to be able to make a comeback? Or they don't even make music anymore. There's no
more. From what I understand, the music
so long,
she's making.
She waited so long. There's no more CDs anymore. There's no more music to sell. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, you know, I've read all these stories about, you know, she does these little performances and purring in clubs where she shows up hours late, and then people don't like the music, and then she insults the audience. And, I mean, you know, there's an old line that says, have you heard this line, that success doesn't change you, it only magnifies what you really were.
Ooh.
And, you never heard that. Okay. So
I never heard that.
No, but you know, everybody, I'm not 100% sure that all of a sudden she went nuts. She always may have always been nuts, and the success just made it out worse. And by the way, you compared her to Jesse Jackson Jr. I want to tell you something right now, and a lot of people here feel the same way I do. They're not buying this whole bipolar.
I don't believe it either.
Here, you know, everybody. Okay, he's depressed. I'll be depressed, too, if I was going to the big house. You know, I would be, you know, anxious. I would be upset, you know, but bipolar disorder, I know people. I have friends who have bipolar relatives. One good friend of mine has a younger sister who's bipolar, and she's told me stories about what she's gone through. It's nothing. What Jesse Jackson Jr., we call him Junior, has gone through. Everybody says this is all a ruse, try to get sympathy, try to get a lesser sentence. And if he did all this stuff because he's bipolar, then what explains his wife also, you know, being arraigned and charged involvement with him? She was bipolar too?
Well, listen, bi does mean two, so maybe both are crazy.
bipolar, right. And they're being sentenced in July, I think a week apart.
Get rid of them.
Well, he's definitely doing some time. Her is a little iffy. Definitely her license will be revoked. A lot of people don't know. He doesn't have a law license. He went to law school, but he never took the bar.
What?
She has.
Let me ask you a question here.
Yes.
I don't want to be so cruel. I know you're in entertainment, Sergio. You know Lisa Nicole Carson from Ally McBeal, kind of an attractive actress.
Yeah, she was schizophrenic. She's schizophrenic, right.
Okay, so she wasn't bipolar. I thought she's schizophrenic.
Yeah, I believe that's,
wow.
Yeah. She was basically at all the – everything I've read about her and the stories, clearly she was schizophrenic.
She's been institutionalized. I think she's currently institutionalized probably, right?
No, I think she's out now. She was institutionalized in the New York area for a while. I did read an interview with her like 2-3 years ago where, you know, she didn't really talk about it. So I assume she's out. She hasn't really done anything. Okay, she's done nothing since then. She's done nothing. I don't even know what she even looks like now. But, yeah, I mean, there were great – really a lot of stories about her. She clearly had – she was probably more schizophrenic than bipolar.
Schizophrenic, I'm a little bit more sympathetic toward that. Bipolar,
yeah,
to me is a euphemism for crazy. I think people at one time you just
no,
knew
it's
just
become
crazy.
It's become an easy catchword for anything. There is a true definition of bipolarism. There is a true definition of that. But then if you're just depressed, if you're eccentric, if you're crazy, they slap it and call it bipolar as a way to diminish it. But
It used to be called manic depression.
People just say you're depressed before that. You know, that's what people just say, you're depressed.
I don't know. I just know that I think that Ms. Hill has the symptoms of someone who is a little – I'm not going to say she's schizophrenic, but – She's just she's crazy. I mean, who, you know, she's not even 40. She's still a young woman. She's not even 40. Have all these.
No, she looks
kids.
Older now. She looks much older now. She
I
really
mean, she
does.
Looks, she looks. Oh, I mean, listen, if she was living the life, you know, really doing the Hollywood thing, she should be looking well maintained. You know, she's not. She's, you know, she's not really well maintained. She talks batty. She's not paying her taxes. She's got six kids. There's no father figure around. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the circumstances of her relationship. I mean, she's crazy. Or bipolar. She talks crazy. Pay your taxes, for Christ's sake. I don't know. I can't say I feel sorry for her. I'm sorry. I just don't.
And also, you know, like a lot of people in entertainment, especially a lot of black people in entertainment, you really need good, solid people around you, people who handle you. A lot of black celebrities and a lot of black athletes don't have that. A lot of black celebrities always like to hire relatives.
No point
to help handle their business. And the reason they do that is because they're so insecure that at least they'll have somebody with them who they think is in someone who has their back. Right?
You know what you know what the problem is also? Many of these folks, I mean, this is cross-racially, but, you know, I think more whites are protected in this way. These people are just not formally educated.
That's true, too.
I mean,
that's true, too.
You know, they go to high school entertainment programs or high school talent programs, whatever you call it, and that it stops there. You would almost
want to say it, but the simple rule, is that unless you have a relative that graduated from Harvard Business School or graduated from a Peter Stark producing school at UCLA, never hire a relative to handle your business. Never do that. You're asking for a world of hurt. Never do that.
Can I weigh in on this?
Yeah, sure.
About the representation of athletes in entertainment, it's funny that this would come up because in July, I will be in D.C. at the NFL agents certification exam just for this reason. I've got a client here who's a R&B singer from the 70s and whatnot and 80s, and a lot of these people are so taken advantage of by loved ones and people who they think have their back, and they don't. And now that I'm out there in my little law practice, people have approached me, oh, man, I'm going to be in the NFL or the CFL. Would you represent me? I said, you know what, let me look into this. And I look into what it takes, and so I'll be there in July becoming a part of helping people to protect themselves. It's not about all the posse and entourage. No. It's about making sure when these guys finish their careers, they're not flipping burgers or they're not living under a freeway. That's where I step in, which is why I decided to go into that line of work.
Okay, you know what?
Good for you.
That's very admirable, man. I'd like to hear more on that. Listen, gentlemen, we've got to go to we've got to leave. We'll pick this up again on Saturday, pre-Mother's Day show. Sergio, you know how I feel. Always welcome, man. Always welcome. BS, continue doing your thing.
Definitely.
Good luck to you with your practice. Catherine, we got to move on out. This is She's Always in My Hair. I know BS are like this. This is a Third Eye Girl Prince remix or remake. She's Always in My Hair. We see you. We'll see you again on Saturday. It's been real.
Maybe I'll marry her. Maybe I won't. Maybe I will not. Let me tell you, if I was a gigolo all my life, she'd still be there. What? Asking me to be my wife.
When the feeling gets you, you just wanna.
Oh, oh,
somebody help me say.
Always in my hair. She's always
one. Always, always in my heart. Yes, you will.
Break it down, y'all.
Whenever I think about giving up, she's there. Whenever I think about going down, she's there. Whenever I think about my hopes and dreams, no matter what direction, she's always, always in my house. She's always, always in my house. She's always.
So much I want to play for you tonight, but can we just keep it right there for a minute? Third eye, they can say, ow!